more compelling reasons to consume whole grains.
Preventing the progression of kidney disease in diabetics.
What's the best weight loss drug?
And have our efforts to transform primary care been successful?
That's what we're talking about this week on PodMed, the weekly look at the medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. Posted on June 17th, 2016, I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang, professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins, president of the Texas Tech University Health Sciences System in El Paso, and dean of the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine.
Rick, I think we need to turn first to this idea of whole grain consumption. We're going to talk about a study that was published in Circulation, but another one was also published this week in the British Medical Journal. And as I served up, and that's no pun intended, sounds like we ought to be consuming really exclusively whole grain products based on these studies.
Well, I was surprised to find out the existing findings on whole grain intake and how they affect mortality are relatively inconclusive. And I say that because, as you know, it's recommended that we have 3 or more servings per day, part of the dietary guidelines. So you would assume that's based upon good data, but it appears that it isn't as strong as one would think, at least not until the results of this study. And it's important because in the U.S., we actually consume less than 1 serving per day on average. So what's the data look like? They looked at all the prospective cohort studies that associated whole grain intake and mortality. They were able to find 14 different studies that included over 750,000 participants. And what they discovered is when they compared the extremes of whole grain intake, that is the highest versus the lowest, it reduced total mortality by about 16%, cardiovascular mortality by about 18%, and cancer mortality by about 12%. And in fact, they established for every increase of 1 serving per day, the relative risk of total cardiovascular and cancer mortality decreased by between 7 and 9%. So there was a linear relationship.
Well, of course, we also know that there's an association between the consumption of refined carbohydrates and diabetes. And since we have a huge societal problem with that, sounds to me like there ought to be some real public health measures undertaken to increase whole grains out there for people to choose.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up the point with diabetes because you might think, well, that would drive a decrease in cardiovascular mortality, but that doesn't explain the decrease in cancer mortality as well. If we had a pill that said, I can give it to you and it decreases your mortality by 15 or 18%, you'd say, oh, I'll take it. Well, it looks like whole grains is what it is, and it's not very difficult.
One thing I'd love to see would be for purveyors of fast food to switch to whole grain products. And I don't think that that's such a big deal, but for some reason, it seems like the barriers are pretty hard to overcome.
And we've seen really the fast food or processed food market change over the last 15 or 20 years, incorporating more healthy items, salads, for example, in many cases, decrease serving size and decrease sugar as well. So I agree with you. This is something that if the consumers demand it, they'll incorporate it.
I like that idea. A nice segue, of course, from here. Let's turn to the Journal of the American Medical Association, a survey of the weight loss drugs that are out there, because clearly there's an association between consumption and weight. Which of them, if you're going to choose that modality to lose weight, might be helpful?
Many people may not be aware that there are now 5 medications that have been approved for the management of obesity, but we have a limited data on their comparative effectiveness. So the authors did an analysis. They looked at all the randomized clinical trials among overweight and obese adults that have been treated with one of these 5 different medications: orlistat, lorcaserin, naltrexone, bupropione, phentermine, topiramate, and liraglutide. Those are the 5 different medications or combinations. In looking at 28 different randomized clinical trials of over 29,000 patients, what they found is that in those that were treated with placebo, about 1/4 of patients lost 5% of their weight or more. But when they looked at the individual medications, 3 times that many, 75% lost 5% or more of those taking phentermine, about 2/3 with liraglutide, about 1/2 with naltrexone or lorcaserin, and about 45% with orlistat. Furthermore, phentermine, which had the highest weight loss, did not have the highest complication rate. It was the 2 medications in the middle. Now, on average, about 35 to 40% of patients stop the medications because of some type of side effect.
And clearly that 5% weight loss, at least for people with diabetes, is really very helpful. This is really interesting data because to me it suggests that if one agent isn't particularly helpful, since they are so different in their mechanisms of action, and now we have this comparative effectiveness, we might be able to move from one to another.
That's true. So I think this kind of gives us a hierarchy. Keep in mind, oftentimes individuals have other conditions or comorbidities that might move you towards one medication or another. For example, liraglutide, as we're going to talk about, is one of the medicines we use to treat diabetics. So people that have diabetes, that might be your agent as opposed to other ones.
Where would you say that the use of medications at all fits within a weight loss strategy?
Well, we've talked before about the most important thing being prevention. Dietary control and increased exercise is the next step. For those people in whom that's not effective, pharmacologic agents could be. And then finally, we talked about the use of metabolic surgery as perhaps the final type of treatment.
Okay. Let's turn now to the New England Journal of Medicine. This issue of people who have diabetes, chronic kidney disease, and what happens to their cardiovascular outcomes with certain medications.
We have spent a fair amount of time talking about diabetes and different medications that have been used to treat diabetes. Most of these agents, although they've been shown to decrease diabetes, they've been not as effective in decreasing what are called the macrovascular complications, the big complications like stroke or heart attack or death. The one exception being empagliflozin, and that was shown in a previous study to decrease the risk of cardiovascular death. Well, they extended it by looking at how it affects kidney disease or not. So from that same study, they looked at the progression of kidney disease in individuals that were either taking placebo or this sodium glucose transport inhibitor. And what they discovered is those that took this newer agent, these are all individuals that, by the way, they had cardiovascular disease, they had slower progression of kidney disease and lower rates of what are called clinically relevant events. Those are things like going on dialysis or having a lot of spillage of protein in the urine. All of these things suggest that this medication can decrease the progression of kidney disease in people that have type 2 diabetes and a cardiovascular complication.
Of course, we're always trying to hone in on this, aren't we? As we have this increasing array of agents that work by different mechanisms, the question is, well, which one could strike more than one target here and help us to get people on monotherapy, hopefully, just one medication instead of that dizzying array of medications people are frequently taking?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because these people were already on what are known to be renal protective drugs, ACE inhibitors, and then in addition to that, got this particular diabetic medication. So although it would be very nice to be able to boil it down to one particular pill, what the study highlights is there are multiple different pathways or mechanisms. It's nice to know that we can slow the progression of kidney disease with a medication that's already been approved.
Excellent. Let's turn then to our final study. This is a look at primary care and changes in primary care, also in NEJM.
This was a study that we've all been looking forward to seeing the results of. In the fall of 2012, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, what's known as CMS, collaborated with 39 different private and public payers to launch what was called the Comprehensive Primary Care Initiative. It was an attempt to both improve the quality of care and, in addition, to decrease the cost of it. It required that the primary care delivery model would build capabilities to improve access and continuity of care, to plan more for preventive and chronic care needs, to do a better job of risk stratifying patients and delivering care, and to coordinate care with other providers. They had enrolled over 500 practices in this primary care initiative, and this is the result of looking 2 years later about quality and cost in that primary care initiative. To do all this, they had to invest about $115,000 per clinician in the care management fees. And when they did that, there was no net savings in expenditure and, unfortunately, no appreciable improvement in the quality of care or the patient experience.
Clearly very disappointing. And so suggest to me anyway, back to the drawing board, hey, we haven't found the right factors yet or combination of factors that are going to result in this outcome.
That is, in fact, one interpretation. Now, this is a 4-year study, so we're just halfway through it. An alternative explanation may be, well, it takes a little bit of time to see costs go down and to see the quality of care go up. But what I think is valuable is these kinds of things turn primary care upside down. It's a huge investment of time and reassignment of individuals and redesign of delivery of care. It's valuable if they improve quality or they decrease costs. But if they do neither, then we spend a lot of time doing nothing. As we sometimes call it, it's a long run for a short slide.
There's a Texas expression if I've ever heard one. On that note then, I am going to talk about the whole grain consumption this week on the blog. That's a look at this week's medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.